Well, welcome back. Just a reminder of some upcoming events. The next Duffs will be on the third Monday of April. All of the Duffs programs are on the third Monday of the month at 7:30. That will be April 20th, and it will feature poet and novelist Constance Erdang, who you might have just recently read about her book Lucha in the Riverfront Times. First novelist, Mona Simpson, whose first novel is called Anywhere But Here, just out by from Random House, and is getting really excellent reviews, one of the up-and-coming young female novelists. And music that night will be by native St. Louis in returning and rapidly rising in New York in the field of jazz, Marty Ehrlich. So it should be a very full and very dynamite evening. Another reminder in April, on April 12th at the River Styx PM series at the Botanical Garden, featured artist will be novelist John Barth, who, as many of you will know, is the author of books like The Sotweed Factor, Giles Goat Boy, and has an upcoming novel that may be out in the next few weeks called Tidewater Tales. But one of the real innovators in contemporary fiction, and well worth hearing, a tremendous writer. So that's April 12th at 7:30 at Ridgeway Center at the Botanical Garden. And the next Duffs program will be April 20th. And a reminder to keep your ears and pockets open for 88.1 developments. For our visiting artist this evening, and all the visiting artists in the Duffs program are supported by a grant for that purpose from the Central West End Savings and Loan. So it's we always like to cite that laudatory and imitatable example of a low community business supporting the arts here in the Central West End and elsewhere. Our featured poet is Arthur Z, and that's not a pen name like Z as in Zorro. It's S-Z-E, it's a Chinese name. He is a Chinese American living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He is both a poet and a translator. He translates works from the Chinese, and Chinese literature is one of the influences on his own writing. Other influences include, he's said in moments of lucidity, I'm sure, the light that one experiences in that region is an influence on his poetry. And also the Native American cultures who are rooted in that area. Arthur comes by that by way of living there and teaching at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. His wife is a Hopi Indian and a weaver. Arthur is the author of three books of poetry, Dazzled, Two Ravens, and the third one is called The Willow Wind. Those books, Dazzled is a collection of his own poetry. The other two books include translations from Chinese writers, ranging from very early traditional Chinese writers to 20th century writings. He's read all over the country. He's had an opportunity to go to places like Hawaii and teach workshops in Alaska. So he gets to move around. This is his first time in St. Louis, so I hope you'll make him welcome and give a good listen to and good warm welcome to Arthur Zay.
This is my first time Can you hear me? This is my first time to St. Louis, and I'm really glad to be here. I'd like to start by reading a poem in Chinese. This is by a very famous poet named Tao Chen, who lived from 365 to 427 AD. This is in Putonghua, sort of Mandarin, Northern Chinese. And I'll translate it in a minute, but I just wanted you to hear the sound of it. Let me say that I admire Tao Chen's work for his spontaneity. He lived in China about 400 AD, and one day he woke up and he quit his job. He bought some land in the mountains. He built his own house. He planted chrysanthemums. He drank wine and he wrote poetry for the rest of his life. And he has a phrase in Chinese, yichu sanshunian, which means as soon as you go, as soon as you depart from that spontaneous path, it'll take you 30 years to find yourself again. Jie lu zai ren jing, er wu che ma xuan, wen jun ha neng er, xin yuan di zi pian, zai ju dong li sha, you ran Zhen Nan Shan, Shan Qi, Er Shi Jia, Fei Niao, Shang Yu Huan, Zi Zhong, You Jin Yi, Yu Bian, Yi Wang Yan. I built my house near where others live, and yet without noise of horse or carriage, you ask, how can this be? A distant mind leaves the earth around it. I pick chrysanthemums below the eastern fence, then gaze at mountains to the south. The mountain air is fine at sunset. Flying birds go back in flocks. In this, there is a truth I wish to tell you, but lose the words. Caw, 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 caw. To comprehend a crow, you must have a crow's mind. To be the night rain, silver on black leaves, you must live in the shine and wet. Some people drift in their lives, green, gold, plankton, phosphorescent in the sea. Others slash. A knife at a yellow window shade tears open the light. But to live digging deep is to feel the blood in you rage as rivers, is to feel love and hatred as fibers of a rope, is to catch the scent of a wolf and turn wild. This next poem is in honor of a person I did construction work with in Santa Fe. It's called The Moon is a Diamond. Flavio Gonzalez, 72, made jackhammer heads during the war and tells me about digging ditches in the Depression for a dollar a day. We are busy plastering the portal and stop for a moment in the April sun. His wife, sick for years, died last January and left a legacy, a $5,000 hospital bill. I see the house he built at 15, the ristras of red chili hanging in the October sun. He sings Paloma Blanca as he works, then stops, turns. I saw the TV photos of the landing on the moon, but it's all lies. The government just went out in the desert and found a crater. Believe me, I know the moon is a diamond. The rehearsal. Xylophone, triangle, marimba, soprano, violin. The musicians use stopwatches, map out in sound the convergence of three rivers at a farm, but it sounds like the jungle at midnight. Caught in a blizzard and surrounded by wolves circling closer and closer, you might remember the smell of weesach on a warm spring night. you might remember three deer startled and stopped at the edge of a road in a black canyon. A child wants to act crazy, acts crazy, is thereby sane. If you ache with longing or are terrified, ache, be terrified, be hysterical. Walk into a redwood forest and listen. Hear a pine cone drop into a pool of water, and what is your life then? In the time it takes to make a fist or open your hand, the musicians have stopped. But a life only stops when what you want is no longer possible. I have a poem about China as well as Alice. I was in China in 1985, and I think everyone knows about a lot of the reversals that people suffered in China during the Cultural Revolution from 1966 to 76. But when you're actually there and you hear story after story after story, it becomes almost overwhelming. I wanted to use this image of photography of a negative, and that's what this poem is called, The Negative. A man hauling coal in the street is stilled forever. Inside a temple, instead of light, a slow shutter lets the darkness in. I see a rat turn a corner running from a man with a chair trying to smash it. See people sleeping at midnight in a Wuhan street on bamboo beds, a dead pig floating, bloated on water. I see a photograph of a son smiling who 2 years ago fell off a cliff, and his photograph is in each room of the apartment. I meet a woman who had smallpox as a child, was abandoned by her mother, but who lived, now has 2 daughters, a son, a son-in-law. They live in 3 rooms and watch a color television. I see a man in blue work clothes whose father was a peasant who joined the Communist Party early, but by the time of the Cultural Revolution had risen in rank and become a target of the Red Guards. I see a woman who tried to kill herself with an acupuncture needle, but instead hit a vital point and cured her chronic asthma. A Chinese poet argues that the fundamental difference between East and West is that in the East, an individual does not believe himself in control of his fate but yields to it. As a negative reverses light and dark, these words are prose accounts of personal tragedy becoming metaphor, an emulsion of silver salts sensitive to light. Laughter in the underground bomb shelter converted into a movie theater. Lovers in the summer palace park. The day can become a Zen garden of raked sand, or a yellow tanager singing on a branch. Feel the terrors and pleasures of the morning. In Tianjin, all the foreigners are sent to a movie, and they must guess at what the authorities do not wish them to see. Dream a rainy landscape, the Hamas Mountains breaking up in mist and jagged light into a series of smaller but dazzling ranges. To distinguish the smell of calendula from delphinium is of no apparent consequence, but guess that crucial moments in history involve an unobtrusive point flaring into a startling revelation. Now be alive to the flowering chives by the window. Feel the potato plant in the whiskey barrel soak up sun. Feel this riparian light, this flow where no word, no water is. This is kind of a change here. Henry Kissinger is supposed to have said, power is my aphrodisiac. And I thought, well, I can do something with that. Power is my aphrodisiac. Power enables him to connect a candlelit dinner to the landing on the moon. He sees a plot in the acid content of American soil, malice in a configuration of palm leaf shadows. He is obsessed with the appearance of democracy in a terrorized nation. If the price of oil is an owl claw, a nuclear reactor is a rattlesnake fang. He has no use for the song of an oriole, bright yellow wings. He refuses to consider a woman in a wheelchair touching the shadow of a sparrow, a campesino dreaming of spring. He revels in the instant before a grenade explodes. This next poem is called Evil Grigri. And Grigri is a charm or an amulet in voodoo. And I'm by no means an expert in voodoo at all, but I was thinking of a kind of an object, an ocarina, which is kind of a clay instrument that you could blow on and make a sound, and fantasizing somehow that maybe you could disarm evil with that. This is called Evil Grigri. Evil Grigri, taste acid in the words sybaritic. Feel deer antlers polished in rain and sun. Taste green almonds, the polar ice cap of Mars melting at the tip of your tongue. Is it possible to wake dressed in a tuxedo, smoking a cigarette, staring at a firing squad? A man is cursed when he remembers he cannot remember his dream. Taste sugar in the word voluptuous. Feel a macaw feather brush across your closed eyelids. See the dead laugh at the pile of shoes at Dachau. See, as a man with one eye, the dead alive and singing, walking down the equinoctial axis of the midnight street. Now feel how the ocarina of your body waits for pleasure to blow and make an emerald sound in the air. Make an apotropaic prayer that the day's evil become the day's wild time. Say guava, passion flower, hibiscus, salt. Say sun, sea, wave. Say wind, star, venom, night. Say mango, river, eucalyptus, scented fang. I think there's only so much, all of these poems that I've read so far have been very short. I think there's only so much you can do in a short poem. And in this new script that I've been working on, I've been playing around with doing sequences of poems. And this next poem is a sequence of six short poems. I didn't want to give up the precision and tightness of a short poem, but I felt like I needed more room to play around with the field of energy. And I didn't want to be tied down to telling a story kind of from beginning to end, but there's certain images that come back again and again. And this sequence of six poems is called The Leaves of a Dream or The Leaves of an Onion. And I don't know, I think I had this fantasy that maybe some people look for apples. You look for a kind of a core or an essence in things. And if you happen to pick up an onion and you start peeling, of course you're never going to find that core or essence. You're just going to have all of these layers that are shed. And that's involved in this poem. Red oak leaves rustle in the wind. Inside a dream, you dream the leaves scattered on dirt and feel it as an instance of the chance configuration to your life. All night, you feel red horses galloping in your blood, hear a piercing siren, and are in love with the inexplicable. You walk to your car, find the hazard lights blinking, find a rust brown knife, a trout, a smashed violin in your hands. And then you wake inside the dream to find tangerines ripening in the silence. You peel the leaves of the dream as you would peel the leaves off an onion. The layers of the dream have no core, no essence. You find a tattoo of a red scorpion on your body. You simply laugh, shiver in the frost, and step back into the world. A Galapagos turtle has nothing to do with the world of the neutrino. The ecology of the Galapagos Islands has nothing to do with a pair of scissors. The cactus by the window has nothing to do with the invention of the wheel. The invention of the telescope has nothing to do with a red jaguar. No, the invention of the scissors has everything to do with the invention of the telescope. A map of the world has everything to do with the cactus by the window. The world of the quark has everything to do with the jaguar circling in the night. The man who sacrifices himself and throws a Molotov cocktail at a tank has everything to do with the sunflower that bends to the light. Open a window and touch the sun, or feel the wet maple leaves flicker in the rain. Watch a blue crab scuttle in clear water, or find a starfish in the dirt. Describe the color green to the color blind, or build a house out of pain. The world is more than you surmise. Take the pines, green, black, slashed by light, etched by wind, on the island across the riptide body of water. Describe the thousand iridescent needles to a blind albino tarahumara. In a bubble chamber, in a magnetic field, an electron spirals and spirals into the center, but the world is more than such a dance, a spiraling in to the point of origin, a spiraling out in the form of a wet leaf, a blue crab, or a greenhouse. The heat ripples, ripple the cactus. Crushed green glass in a parking lot or a pile of rhinoceros bones give off heat, though you might not notice it. The heat of a star can be measured under a spectrometer, but not the heat of the mind or the heat of Angkor Wat. And the rubble of Angkor Wat gives off heat. So do apricot blossoms in the night, green fish, black bamboo, or a fisherman fishing in the snow. And an angstrom of shift turns the pleasure into pain. The ice that rips the fingerprint off your hand gives off heat, and so does each moment of existence. A red, red leaf disintegrating in the dirt burns with the heat of an acetylene flame, and the heat rippling off the tin roof of the adobe house is simply the heat you see. What is the secret to a Guarneri violin? Wool dipped in an indigo bath turns bluer when it oxidizes in the air. Murat is changed in the minds of the living. A shot of tequila is related to Antarctica shrinking. A crow in a bar or red snapper on ice is related to the 12-tone method of composition. And what does the tuning of timpani have to do with the smell of your hair? To feel at 30 you have come this far, to see a bell over a door as a bell over a door. To feel the care and precision of this violin is no mistake, nor is the sincerity and shudder of passion by which you live. Crush an apple, crush a possibility. No single method can describe the world. Therein is the pleasure of chaos, of leaps in the mind. A man slumped over a desk in an attorney's office is a parrotfish caught in a seaweed mass. A man who turns to the conversation in a bar is a bluefish hooked on a cigarette. Is the desire and collapse of desire in an unemployed carpenter the instinct of salmon to leap upstream? The smell of eucalyptus can be incorporated into a theory of aggression. The pattern of interference in a hologram replicates the apple, knife, horse tails on the table, but misses the sense of chaos, distorts in its singular view. Then touch, shine, dance, sing, be, becoming, be. I'm going to come back for a minute to another Chinese poem. This is a poet named Ma Zhiyuan who lived about 1300 AD in China. And I decided to translate this poet because, to my knowledge, he had never been translated into English before. And this particular poem is very, very short, but it's one that's haunted me for a long time. Okay. Goodness. You okay? Let me just say that in Chinese, if you use the word shu, which means tree, it could be one tree, two trees, five, ten, 100. The written character doesn't change. And generally, you would just use like one or two or several, and you would use those words in Chinese in front of tree, so as a reader, you would know. This particular poet strung out a whole sequence of phrases, and you don't know if there's one or two or five or ten. There's a vine, a tree, a crow, a bridge, water, house, road, wind, horse. Is there one horse, five horses, ten horses? Is there one road, several roads? Where is the water? Is there one stream or several streams? Is there a house by the stream? Where are the crows? Is there one crow or ten crows? Are the crows in the tree? Is the tree near the house? You don't know where anything is, and you just get one after the other that is presented to you. And, you know, if you knew Chinese and you were to ask to paint the picture, everyone would paint it differently. And it's a real beauty. It sounds like this. Ku Tun Lao Shu Hun Ya Xiao Chao Liu Shui Rin Jia Gu Dao Shi Feng Shou Ma Shi Yang Shi Sha Duan Chang Rin Zai Tian Ya. And this is, of course, just a very rough approximation in English that I came up with. Withered vine, old tree, crows, a small bridge, flowing water, houses, ancient road, west wind, lean horse, sun sinking in the west, and a man crushed at the sky's edge. John Cage says in a book called Silence that no matter how anyone tries, you cannot construct a silence. And I thought, well, maybe it might be fun trying to construct one. There certainly are different kinds of silences. And I used this house that was falling apart in Florence, Arizona. I don't know if any of you have ever been there. We walked through a yellow ochre adobe house. The windows are smeared with grease. The doors are missing. Rain leaks through the ceilings of all the rooms, and the ribs of saguaro thrown across vigas are dark, wet, and smell. The view outside of red faded and turquoise faded adobes could be Chihuahua, but it isn't. I stop and look through an open doorway, see wet newspapers rotting in mud in the small center patio. I suddenly see red bougainvillea blooming against a fresh whitewashed wall. Smell yellow wisteria through an open window on a warm summer night. But no, a shot of cortisone is no cure for a detaching retina. I might just as well see a smashed dog in the street, a boojum tree pushing its way up through asphalt. And as we turn and arrive where we began, I notice the construction of the house is simply room after room forming a square. We step outside and the silence is as water is, taking the shape of the container. Algal, miser. I wanted to become pure like the Arabic names of stars, but perhaps I have erred. At sunrise, the song of an ordinary robin startles me. I want to say vireo, but it is a robin. In bed I turn and breathe with your breath. Remember 4 days ago, opening my hands to a man who blessed me and others with an eagle feather. Betelgeuse, Deneb, moonshine on a clear summer night, but the splendor is to taste smoke in your hair. Forget, Fez. The moment of creation. A painter indicates the time of day in a still life. Afternoon light slants on a knife, lemons, green wine bottle with some red wine. We always leave something unfinished. We want X, and having X want Y, and having Y want Z. I try to sense the moment of creation in the shine on a sliced lemon. I want to connect throwing gravel on mud to being hungry. Eat, a man from Afghanistan said, and pointed to old rotting apples in the opened car trunk. I see a line of men dancing a cloud dance. Two women dance intricate lightning steps at either end. My mistakes and failures pulse in me even as moments of joy, and I want the bright moments to resonate out like a gamelan gong. I want to make the intricate tessellated moments of our lives a floor of jade, obsidian, turquoise, ebony, lapis. This next poem is a sequence of two poems. It's called The Unnameable River. Is it in the anthracite face of a coal miner, crystallized in the veins and lungs of a steel worker, pulverized in the grimy hands of a railroad engineer? Is it in a child naming a star, coconuts washing ashore, dormant in a volcano along the Rio Grande? You can travel the 4,000 miles of the Nile to its source and never find it. You can climb the 5 highest peaks of the Himalayas and never recognize it. You can gaze through the largest telescope and never see it. But it's in the capillaries of your lungs. It's in the space as you slice open a lemon. It's in a corpse burning on the Ganges, in rain splashing on banana leaves. Perhaps you have to know you are about to die to hunger for it. Perhaps you have to go alone into the jungle armed with a spear to truly see it. Perhaps you have to have pneumonia to sense its crush. But it's also in the scissor hands of a clock. It's in the precessing motion of a top when a torque makes the axis of rotation describe a cone, and the cone spinning on a point gathers past, present, future. In a crude theory of perception, the apple you see is supposed to be a copy of the actual apple. But who can step out of his body to compare the two? Who can step out of his life and feel the Milky Way flow out of his hands? An unpicked apple dies on a branch. That is all we know of it. It turns black and hard, a corpse on the Ganges. Then go ahead and map out 3,000 miles of the Yangtze. Walk each inch. Feel its surge and flow as you feel the surge and flow in your own body. And the spinning cone of a precessing top is a form of existence that gathers and spins death and life into one. It is in the duration of words, but beyond words, river, 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 river. The coal miner may not know he has it. The steel worker may not know he has it. The railroad engineer may not know he has it, but it is there. It is in the smell of an avocado blossom and in the true passion of a kiss. I'm going to read maybe just a few more. Let me see. This is a suite of 4 poems. They're intended to stand separately, but they use images from Alaska. I was on an island called Kosciuszko Island near Sitka in southeast Alaska, working with about 20 or 30 salmon fishermen and their families. And I wanted to use the images in different ways. Edna Bay. One day the men pulled a house off float logs up on land with a 5-ton winch and a system of pulleys, while a woman with a broken tooth chewed aspirin and watched. A man was cutting down a red cedar with a chainsaw when it kicked back in his face, cut his chin and hand to bone. A neighbor called Ketchikan through a marine operator and chartered a plane out before dark. Life on Kosciuszko Island is run by the weather and tides. Is the rain today from the southeast or southwest? If southeast, the men go into the rainforest cursing. It will be hard to dig out pilings for a house. I see how these fishermen hate seiners and humpies, want to spend days and days trolling at 24 fathoms. I watch a great blue heron knife herring at low tide, see a bald eagle circle and circle the shoreline. One night with a full moon and a wind on my face, I went across the bay in a skiff looking at the rippling black water. Days I will wake startled, dreaming of bear, see sheets of thin ice floating out in the bay. Black Java pepper. Despair, anger, grief. As a seiner indiscriminately hauls humpies, jellyfish, kelp, we must ferouche, recalcitrant, conversely, angle for sockeye. Our civilization has no genetic code to make wasps return each spring to build a nest by the water heater in the shed. We must igneous metamorphic, despite such plans as to push Mount Fuji into the ocean to provide more land, grind cracked black Java pepper into our speech so that limestone into marble, granite into gneiss, we become through our griefs rainforest islands, song. The halibut. Dipping spruce branches into the calm water to collect herring eggs is an azure, unthinking moment. A fisherman never forgets the violet hue of December stars. Does time make memory or memory make time polychromatic? Squawk, in a split second one hears a Steller's Jay, Raven, car tires on gravel, chainsaw, fly, wind chime. This constellation of polychromatic sounds becomes a crimson moment that fugitive colored will fade. But one never forgets lighting kerosene lamps before noon. In July, when one has 20 hours of light, each second is fuchsia dyed. One might be pouring Clorox down a hose to flush out an octopus when one feels the moment explode, when a fisherman using power crank and long line looks into the water and sees rising a 200-pound halibut with bulging eyes. And this last one is called Standing on an Older Bridge Over a Creek. At low tide, midnight, with a flashlight, we walk along the shore, stumbling on rocks, slightly drunk step through a creek where Arctic water pours in over my boots. Nothing to do but go on. We come to a tidal pool, stop, see the exposed colonies of blue-black mussels go up to a trail, come to an alder bridge, stop. Let the mature mind consider danger, guess the architecture of a Persian house in a dream contains the sockeye an osprey hungers for. If so, then emerald, if no, despair. Like the camouflage of snowy plover eggs in sand and bright sunshine, we stand on an alder bridge over a creek, are the April starlight and laugh. I think I'll close with this next poem. It's also a sequence of four short ones. It's called Shooting Star. There's a very famous Chinese calligrapher named Wang Shijie, who is in here. I might say it opens with some images of violence, but I think it's, rather than sort of pretend that the violence isn't there, it's a way of opening yourself up to it and passing through it. Shooting star. In a concussion, the mind severs the pain. You don't remember flying off a motorcycle and landing face first in a choya. But a woman stabbed in her own apartment by a prowler searching for money and drugs will never forget her startled shriek die in her throat, her own blood soaking into the floor. The quotidian violence of the world is like a full moon rising over the Ortiz Mountains. Its pull is everywhere. But let me live a life of violent surprise and startled joy. I want to thrust a purple iris into your hand, give you a sudden embrace. I want to live as Wang Shijie lived, writing characters in gold ink on black silk, not to frame on a wall, but to live the splendor now. Deprived of sleep, she hallucinated, and believing she had sold the genetic research on carp, signed a confession. Picking psilocybin mushrooms in the mountains of Veracruz, I hear tin cowbells in the slow rain, see men wasted on pulque sitting under palm trees. Is it so hard to see things as they truly are, a route marked in red ink on a map, the shadows of apricot leaves thrown in wind and sun on a wall? It is easy to imagine a desert full of agaves and golden barrel cactus, red earth, a red sun. But to truly live, one must see things as they are and as they might become. A wrench is not a fingerprint on a stolen car, nor baling wire the undertow of the ocean. I may hallucinate, but see the men in drenched clothes as men who saw and refused to see. Think of being a judge or architect or trombonist, and do not worry whether thinking so makes it so. I overhear two men talking in another room. I cannot transcribe the conversation word for word, but know if they are vexed or depressed, joyful or nostalgic, an elm leaf floats on a pond. Look, a child wants to be a cardiologist, then a cartographer, but wanting so does not make it so. It is not a question of copying out the Heart Sutra in your own blood on an alabaster wall. It is not a question of grief or joy, but as a fetus grows and grows, as the autumn moon ripens the grapes, greed and cruelty and hunger for power ripen us, enable us to grieve, act, laugh, shriek, see it all as the water on which the elm leaf floats. Write out the memories of your life in red gold, disappearing ink, so that it all dies, no, lives. Each word you speak dies, no, lives. Is it all at once in the mind? I once stepped on a sea urchin, used a needle to dig out the purple spines. Blood soaked my hands, but one spine was left and I carried it 1,000 miles. I saw then the olive leaves die on the branch, saw dogs tear flesh off a sheep's corpse. To live at all is to grieve, but once, to have it all at once is to see a shooting star, shooting star, shooting star. Thank you.